The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. This is the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. Check them out at clearpathfinancialpartners.com. And Ryan Kittredge here with us. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, Hank. How are you?
Good, thank you. Hey, we've talked about a number of different things on some of our past podcasts. People can find those at clearpathfinancialpartners.com. We were doing trusts just a month ago. And remember, if you're going to become a trustee, it is an awesome responsibility. And we've talked with some of your partners about people who want to invest in homes and to use that as part of their portfolio. Today, let's specifically talk a little bit about people who are looking to buy a home. And you want to go out, you want to buy that house. You find that house and you say, boy, this is a great house. Now you want to buy it. But Ryan, to set this up, you haven't sold your home yet. You may have it ready to go, but you don't want to lose this opportunity of this fantastic home you have found. So you're going to buy it, but you haven't sold your house yet, which, of course, is how most of us finance buying the new house. What do
right.
we do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on to talk about this. It's come up more and more the last few years, I think, in the wake of the post-COVID mega, you know, real estate price appreciation frenzy. And, you know, while that's maybe simmered down a little bit, the prices are still elevated, certainly, but also there's still that limited supply. Inventory has been a lot lower these, I guess, past couple of years, especially. And we've been noticing it, especially when it comes to clients that are looking to, I don't even want to say downsize, but like find their perfect retirement home, like the forever home for the next chapter kind of thing, mm-hmm. where they'll feel comfortable. Oftentimes it's a single level living. It might be in a condo type townhouse development where they don't want to deal with the, you know, snow removal and landscaping, and they want everything taken care of, right? It could be just closer to kids. It could be for many different reasons, but they know they have the ability to move, but all of a sudden the right option pops up and they're like, oh boy, how are we going to do this? Do we take a mortgage? Do we just like raid our 401k and like pay for this thing? Because I heard you should pay cash if you can, because it's so competitive, right? So they want to give themselves advantages. So, I mean, ideally you kind of plan this out in advance, right? And it's not on a whim, but I mean, we've been surprised. Like we've had clients for 10, 15, 20 years that they're like, no, we love our house. It's great. And then they have some conversations, a few months go by. And then by the time they call us, they're like, oh no, we've decided like this is what's important to us. And we're going to move here to be closer to the kids or to the beach or whatever it is. And so, yeah, there are ways to get prepared and be able to, I think, accomplish both things, and which is, you know, be well positioned as a potential buyer, but also have a strategy where you're not liquidating all your savings or cashing out retirement plans with unknown tax consequences.
And Ryan, this really seems to go along with a couple of our other recent podcasts. And again, clearpathfinancialpartners.com to check those out, where you've talked about people who are in that 3 to 5 year ramp up to retirement. It seems as if this might be the same kind of time when people are making that decision. So they're sort of in this early 60s or somewhere maybe in their 60s mm-hmm. as they're kind of looking at this. So, all right, don't want to have, you're not going to liquidate your stocks. You don't want to mess with your retirement. So what's maybe the first option that comes to mind?
And it depends on what age and stage you're at and if you're still working or not. But, you know, obviously these things happen at different times for different people. Right. But we do see it a lot throughout your 60s, I would say mid to late 60s to early 70s. And I think the reasons why are typically by that point, the geography in terms of being close to work is not a priority any longer because they're not, you know, they're done, right? Or they're soon to be done. or now the kids that they wanted to, you know, be close to, or, you know, certainly have through the, say, the high school system and through college and be there. Now they're maybe on their own by that point. They're sort of empty nesters. And so whether it's before retirement in some cases, and they want to just kind of get prepared and they have that vision a few years out, sometimes it's few or several years into retirement where they're like, I don't know, is this the place for the next so ever many years? And it can come for different reasons. We've had people that have visited friends down in Florida and they're like, they thought they hated Florida, and then they go visit their friends in a certain part and they're like, it's the best community. There's all these great retirees. It's energetic, the weather, and so forth. So things can change. And so I think one of the most common things that people often overlook is the ability to take a home equity line of credit. And for a lot of people, that may be a good place to start with, right? Of course, like savings and things like that could go toward it, and we can talk about that, or you could take some use investments and things like that. But oftentimes for that bridge, when you know that at least the plan is that, okay, we're essentially taking, you know, maybe they have a Colonial and Holden that's worth $700,000, and they want to buy a condo that's sort of equivalent value, let's say. So they know that they have the equity to go into the next place, but there could be that few month delay so that they're well positioned, because most people at this point say, hey, like, I know I can sell my home. That's not what I'm worried about. We're worried if we list it, we get a buyer right away, and then the house we want doesn't pop up. And then we feel like we're displaced, or we have to become renters or move in with the kids, or, you know, whatever temporary situation, none of which are generally attractive. So if you can essentially free up that equity in advance, then you're not pressured to sell. And so that's a good way to do that. Now there's limits. You can generally borrow up to 80% of the loan. You have to look, banks are different. Some have costs associated with opening it. Many don't. Oftentimes it's just the interest draw, and it's typically tied to prime rate, and it might be prime or prime minus a little bit. So you're paying the interest rate, and, you know, there may be prepayment penalties of a few hundred dollars. So you have to look at those things and weigh it out. But that can be a great option to start with.
Yeah, so under that option, one of the great things then is that you know that eventually you are going to sell your home, and selling that home is going to go to the price of your new home. So that repayment that you just mentioned, so I'm probably really only doing that monthly interest or some of the other ways to repay it, maybe only for a few months. It's not something that's going to be really long term, where I'm taking on you know, more debt in some way.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. And there's always I think any, whether an explicit or an implicit cost, there's some type of cost, including an opportunity cost, no matter which way you go. So if you're borrowing, and you're borrowing against your equity, in this case of your home, your current home, then yeah, you're paying a rate. We know interest rates aren't attractive relative to where they've been in recent years, but you might be looking at 6-7%. But to your point, this is a temporary, this is a bridge loan. And so if it's just a few months on it, generally that may be more attractive than the alternative options, which could be selling appreciated stock and paying 20% capital gains tax, or withdrawing from your IRA and popping up into the next tax bracket and paying in the low to mid 30s. So you sort of have to weigh those things out.
Yeah. And as you said, sort of thinking about people who are in their 60s. So people who are, again, thinking about retirement, or retirement maybe in their future, recently retired, or it's coming up at some point. Home equity bridge loan seems like the first thing that would probably come to most people's minds. Are there other lines of credit that people would be able to use, you know, that are sort of akin to or might be better for some people than that home equity bridge loan?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's another great option that I think is, I mean, I don't think it's certainly lesser known, or at least I hear less people are aware of this option, is what's called a securities based line of credit. And it's basically just using, again, a bank partnering with an institution. And there are certain ones that are generally approved depending on where your investment assets are held. But basically what happens is that bank will look, and it's generally a soft credit inquiry, but it's not like you don't have to get approved from a credit standpoint and show income, but they're using, just like a home equity line of credit does on your house, they're using your investment account, let's say your stock account or, you know, your mutual fund account as the collateral, which can allow you to essentially use up to, again, up to a limit of a percent on that money without actually selling the investments, which could incur taxable gains and would be essentially out of the market. And then there's the opportunity cost of what they would earn, right? So that can avoid that, or at least give them access to it, again, without selling the asset, but just using that as the collateral. And those generally are quick and easy. I mean, if you're working with a team that in the right company and they're familiar with them, generally a couple day approval, you're not, you know, showing documents and having to jump through underwriting hoops, and you can borrow on it, pay it off, and, you know, never use it again.
Yeah.
The original intention.
The way that it goes. This is the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners, clearpathfinancialpartners.com. And here we are looking at the scenario where you're going to go and you're going to buy this home. At the same time, you haven't yet sold your home. So, you know, the timing of all this, how do you kind of get this home equity bridge loan we've been talking about, or the securities-backed line of credit? And we're going to get into some more of these things as well. I can't see where there would be much of a downside with a home equity bridge loan. For some of these things that we're going to be talking about, Ryan, or for the securities-backed line of credit, I mean, are there risks? Are there downsides to some of these things?
Yeah, Hank, there are a couple things to be aware of. I think in regard to the home equity line of credit, just to know if there are any like application, appraisal fees, or early like payoff fees, like early termination if you close the line in the first, say, couple years, which will happen if you open it just to use it as a bridge and then you sell the house, the line would close. So those can be a few hundred bucks. There are some banks locally. I know Citizens Bank right now is, you know, does not have those early termination fees. So that can be a good option. With the securities baseline of credit, that one really, I mean, the biggest thing to keep in mind really encourages you to not borrow up to the maximum, just like you typically don't want to on any sort of line of credit. You want to leave some wiggle room. Is that if the market, depending on how you're invested, if you're invested pretty aggressively, let's say it's mostly stocks or stock funds that you're invested in your account, and those take a big dip and you go, you know, sort of that line gets squeezed, there can be what's called a margin call where you need to either add more funds or sell securities to pay it off. That, I don't want to say it never happens. When you think of a couple instances, yeah, like the last several years, someone, if they were tight and going up toward the maximum, like in the COVID sell-off, recently with the tariff, you know, announcements and all that, you got to be careful. But unlikely, especially if you play it conservatively, yeah, right? And you borrow, let's say you keep it to half or 60% of the value, you should be in good shape.
Ryan, I'm going to guess that when we first started talking about this, there were a lot of people who immediately thought about their retirement savings. And most of us, a lot of that comes from our 401k. What does it make sense if you're thinking it's only going to be a few months, or, hey, I've just got to, I can't lose this house. I know my house will sell, as you've said. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just either dip into my 401k or... Mm-hmm. Can I borrow against my 401k?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great question. So most 401ks do allow you to borrow from them if you're still employed, but the limits are pretty small. So it's the IRS mandated max is up to 50% with a maximum of 50,000, right? So if somebody needed that to, like, say, pay a hospital bill or something like that that they couldn't come up with, sure, if it's, you know, but with something where the purchase price is so large, that may only get you a little ways there. But the 401k loan can certainly be an option. People ask about loaning from their IRAs. They have individual retirement accounts, or they rolled over their 401ks to an IRA. IRAs and old 401ks, if you're not actively employed, you can't borrow off of them, but you can withdraw them. You got to be really careful with this one, but there is what's called a 60-day rollover rule, and we have had a couple of clients do it. You have to be very careful because you get 60 days to essentially withdraw the money. And as long as you get it back in within 60 days, you can only do this once in a calendar year, it's not taxable. So we've cut it close a couple times when a closing cost got delayed because the concern is, okay, if you borrow $300,000 from your IRA and you think that money is coming back and then that doesn't within the 60 days, it's the same as if you just withdrew it. And that's $300,000 more of income that you're paying taxes on.
And I got to make sure that I'm paying this back.
Yeah. So we don't like that option. That's like that's like one of the, you know, not so great options.
Yeah, but it's there. The home equity bridge loan, the securities backed line of credit, but the 401k loan is there as well. Ryan, I'll tell you, quick story about the Stoltz family history. My father carried heavy life insurance on his kids. Yeah. My older sisters were a little offended by this because they're like, Dad, what exactly are you betting on?
Right.
But my dad was always, and I feel like this fits the scenario, whether I got to get you through a semester of college, whether I've got something else that has come up, my dad was always borrowing against the cash value of his life insurance or against any of the life insurance policies that he held. And that was really his go-to.
Yeah. That's an option.
Is that something that could work here?
It is, absolutely. If you have a cash value life insurance policy that you've had for a number of years. A lot of people these days have term insurance. You know, there's not, I don't see as many people, at least of the, you know, say that are in their 50s or 60s today that have big cash value whole life and universal life policies, but some clients do. I have one myself, some clients do, and we've used it for that very purpose. And that's another one where you're basically, the company is just essentially giving you the money, but they're not dispersing out the cash value as a distribution, at which point the gain can be taxable and it could jeopardize the policy. They're just loaning you against it. And typically you got to look at what they charge for an interest rate, but oftentimes they have a way of kind of washing it out or getting close to a wash loan where they might charge you 5% to borrow money from your life insurance policy, which you say, oh boy, why would I pay 5%, you know, to borrow my own money? Well, on the other end, they may be crediting you 4% back into the cash value. So it may just be like a 1% sort of spread, true cost. That's often what I see. So that can be an option for those that have it. And we have one client right now, they're building a property in Florida that will be their retirement home when they retire. And yeah, they're using a big chunk from a VUL, a variable universal life policy that they've been stuffing for, you know, 20 years.
Ryan, what else do we have out there that we can use? What else do we need to know?
Hank, I think those cover the basics. If you've got a wealthy uncle, you know, with no heirs and he's always asking you to like come out on his boat and talk about his plans for the future. I mean, maybe Uncle Jimmy can give you a nice loan. But yeah, I think for most people, it's looking at, you know, what do you have liquid in the bank? You may want to use some of that, but most people don't want to burn through all their savings. They also don't want to raid the retirement accounts and sell a bunch of stocks. So these are, I think, the best ways in terms of bridging that when you just need that money to come in untethered with a cash offer and be really strong. I mean, and you want to have sort of that pre-approval letter, not necessarily from a bank, but oftentimes what we do is just for clients draft a letter that says, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones have liquid assets in excess of X amount, 800,000 or whatever the purchase price that they're looking for is. And that serves as like, hey, we're serious and we can come up with the money. They don't care if you sell your investments or you borrow from them until your other property is sold. It's frankly none of their business. You're still a cash buyer. So that puts you, you know, in an advantageous spot.
What are the things that we should have in our minds as we go through this? We're looking at the home equity loan. We're looking at the securities-backed line of credit. But just in general, as we embark on this, hey, I just found my dream house, this $700,000 house for later in life. You know, I'm going to sell a home of greater or equal value. Besides, you know, how we're getting these loans and getting the cash and making this happen, what else are some things that we should be thinking about or have in our minds?
In order to successfully deploy the strategy without a lot of unnecessary friction, stress, costs, you want to have things like your house cleaned out, right? It's amazing how many people underestimate the time that it takes to get rid of stuff in a place that they've been for decades. Right. So not to wait until you have an offer and you close and then you're like, oh, great. Now we're going to think about cleaning out the house to get ready to sell. Because when people say, hey, we're getting ready to clean out the house so that it's ready to sell, they tend to think it's going to be like, you know, weeks, and it's usually months.
Yeah. I think that to me is something that I was thinking about during this whole big conversation, Ryan, even to the extent that you think that, okay, I'm going to buy this home and I'm going to get this loan and it's going to be for a short period of time because I'm just going to turn around and now I'm going to put my own home up for sale. But that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, but how quickly are you really going to make things happen?
You want it lined up, right? So you want your place getting cleaned out. You want stuff if you're going to take it with you, maybe some things just, you know, sort of set aside in the garage. You should have, you know, if you're working with a realtor or if you're self-listing it, you should have your pictures ready. Everything's good to go so that ideally, once you have that accepted offer and you have your closing date lined up, let's say a month down the road, you can list your house immediately and not waste any time because you really want to limit the amount of crossover because it's also really expensive to carry two properties, and people, I think, discount that because you're also paying taxes and utilities and all those other things on two. So you want to minimize that time in between by getting prepared ahead of time.
Ryan, people want to contact you. They want to contact ClearPath Financial Partners on this or anything else. Well, how do they do that?
Go right to our website, clearpathfinancialpartners.com. We're located right in Northboro on Route 20 near the center of town. So pretty easy to get, you know, to get there from downtown Worcester, maybe 15, 20 minutes. But yeah, I'd say go on our website. You can check us out there, make an inquiry. We can set up a phone call if you have questions.
More great information. Make sure you check out all the podcasts of ClearPath Financial Partners. You can do that right at clearpathfinancialpartners.com. For Ryan Kittredge, I'm Hank Stoltz. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners.